So the Tory Minister David Livingstone is visiting Londonderry today. I wonder what sort of welcome he'll get after the government told Northern Ireland businesses trading across the border to contact Dublin for advice in the event of a no-deal Brexit. Maybe that is you. You are a business that trades across the border. We want to hear from you this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. Let's first talk to the financial journalist Paul Gosling. Paul, businesses in the Northwest, what will they make of this advice?
I think there'll be enormous sense of frustration. I mean, not the least of which is the point that you raised earlier, which is the ask Dublin for advice if you want to sell into the Republic. I mean, there's a sentence in the guidance from the UK government which should be worrying to any business that's exporting into the EU. It says the free circulation of goods between the UK and the EU would cease in the event of a no-deal arrangement. And I think there's a lot of concern. I think, in the retail sector, because one of the sectors that has survived and that's benefited from cross-border trade has been the retail sector, somewhere like Derry, where a lot of the trade is from consumers across the border. And there will be a lot of concern amongst those businesses about the extent to which their consumers will continue to shop with them. So I think there's a lot of concern out there.
Christopher Montgomery is also with us. Good morning to you, Christopher. You're a Conservative Party member, and you're also the DUP's chief of staff at Westminster until last year, and you were also a director of Vote Leave, and as well, you're from Derry yourself. Well, a lot of frustration in the area and concern, genuine concern from businesses there.
Well, there's a lot of frustration from me about the way you've set this up. The idea that we should be surprised that the government says, if you want to know how you're going to trade with the Republic after Brexit, in the event of a no-deal Brexit, ask Dublin, is surprising, is amazing. Of course you ask Dublin. We haven't got any clarity from them what they would do in the circumstance. The only people who can tell us what they would do in the circumstance are them. So of course the government says...
There you go, Paul Gosling. You're going to be trading with Dublin, so why wouldn't you talk to them and ask what the deal will be?
Well, because you would have hoped that actually matters would have been negotiated already between the UK government and the European Commission. I mean, I think it's not simply this, ask the Republic of Ireland about what the future trading relationship is going to be. It's the fact that we know that there's going to be difficulty in terms of VAT and tariffs and customs approvals. And the Treasury itself has indicated that the economy will be 7.7% smaller in probability with no deal over the next 15 years. So it's not simply about what happens in terms of the relationships. It's also in terms of both the uncertainty and also the fact that there is a lot of expectation that Northern Ireland will be specifically hit. I mean, the government has said that the two regions that will be worst affected by Brexit will be the northeast of England, because of the extent to which it manufactures cars that are sold into the European Union, and Northern Ireland. And those border areas are the ones that are going to be hit most of all. And actually, a lot of employers have already suffered because of the devaluation of sterling related to Brexit, which has meant it's increasingly difficult to recruit excellent staff from across the border, because in real terms, they'll be earning less.
Christopher?
There aren't many employers in the Northwest who are saying the devaluation of sterling is a bad thing in terms of consumers coming over the border from the Republic. But let's deal with Treasury statistics. As you say, I was director of Vote Leave. One of the key pieces of propaganda that came out of George Osborne's Treasury in the run-up to the referendum was, if we vote to leave, there will be an immediate recession. Unemployment will increase in the hundreds of thousands. None of these things came true. So I think we need to move this debate on from these project fear terms, which do nothing to help realistic or rational debate.
No, this is not true, because the rational debate, you see the evidence this week from the AIB Bank in terms of what's happened in Northern Ireland. Half of Northern Ireland firms that had plans to expand, to invest, have not.
Okay, one at a time, Christopher, you make your point and then I'll bring you back in, Paul. No, you're both being extra polite. Christopher, you go ahead and I'll bring Paul back in.
I think it's very difficult to listen to an economist who's talking about devaluation being a bad thing for businesses in the Northwest. Devaluation of sterling is a boon to businesses in the Northwest.
Paul Gosling?
Well, I don't think businesses in the Northwest have specifically benefited from this. I've not seen any indication that their exports have significantly increased. Yes, there's been some sustenance of the retail sector off the back of it, certainly. And certainly I believe that sterling was overvalued prior to Brexit. But you can't deny the fact that the AIB Bank this week put out a survey result which found that half of Northern Ireland businesses that had intended to invest have put their plans either on hold or cancelled them. And we know that this has had specific impacts in the northwest
okay.
of Ireland.
OK, let's bring in businessman Erwin Armstrong and Aidan Connolly, director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
So, Erwin, you do trade across the border. So, you know, have you made preparations? Are you aware of other businesses that are getting ready for this as a potential?
We do trade across the border, though it's not a major part of our business. It's clear, I think, that this document or these documents are part of a negotiating process. I mean, I don't think anybody is going to take seriously a lot of the things that are in them. Go and ask Ireland. There's no point going and asking Ireland because Ireland doesn't have any part in the decision-making process. You have got to go and ask the EU. You know, so making comments like that is absolutely ridiculous. There is no desire on the part of the EU or the UK to not have a deal. It's the shape of the deal.
But you must agree, though, Erwin, that there is always a possibility that there will be a no-deal Brexit and therefore preparations are necessary just in case.
Well, there are preparations. Publishing a lot of documents is not really what I, to be honest, would call preparation. Does it really matter if you pay an extra few pence on your Visa card? Is that part of the preparation or is that conditioning the public to say, oh, this is going to be bad for us? I mean, there are all sorts of things in there that I don't agree with at all. You know, the whole process has been a complete and utter shambles from start to finish.
This is a process that you're in favour of, essentially.
I'm in favour of the result. I am not in favour by any stretch of the imagination by the way in which it's been handled by both the EU and the UK government. They have, for example, the EU made it plain to start, we are out here to penalise the UK. And
so you would have done a better job then, Erwin, if it was you in charge of this, the exit plan.
I would never claim I would do a better job. All I know is the job that's been done.
Do you think now, Erwin, that you're not getting what you actually voted for?
There's no doubt we're not getting what we voted for.
Because beforehand, I think there were people saying that, you know, a deal with the EU would be easy because we're such a valuable market and why wouldn't they want to trade with us? This will not be a problem.
They do want to trade with us, and that's why I'm saying the negotiations have been such a shambles. You could actually probably within a month have set up the headlines of what you wanted the deal to be. Okay, there would have been lots and lots of fine detail to come afterwards, but you could have set it up at the beginning. They then allowed the EU to dictate what was on the agenda and put Northern Ireland on the agenda up front. When it's impossible to put Northern Ireland on the agenda up front until you've worked out what the overall trade deal is going to be. So when it's those sorts of things which have been a shambles through the whole thing, and it shouldn't have been done that way.
OK, let's go to the phones now. Paul, good morning to you. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say, we're all to leave. We all knew the rules were on leaving. We're trying to water down the rules now to get a deal for ourselves.
Did you vote to leave, Paul?
It's a rebel in way I voted to leave or not. The point is democracy spoke. Now, the point is that leaders of the parties that were campaigning to leave suddenly done runners.
Yeah, but the specifics of what we were voting to leave or remain weren't completely ironed out. You know, there were promises made on both sides of the campaign which maybe haven't come to fruition and issues that have arose since. So has that changed your mind on how you did vote?
The promises should never have been made. The rules were quite clear by the EU. If you leave the EU, this is what's happening with you. What was the promises about? There was no promises. The rules is there. We had to take it on the chin now and get on with it. The leaders of cried for it to leave the EU have now done a runner because they didn't expect to get the result of leave. And when they did get the result of leave, they didn't have a plan in place. And we've been left to deal with.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much. Aidan Connolly, have you been in touch with Dublin yet? Are your preparations in place?
No, and to be honest, I think that there's too much time being spent on one little phrase within it. I think, yes, we are going to have to work with Dublin. Yes, it is going to have to. We're also going to have to work with the EU. But the main thing in this is...
But you say that as if it's a very small thing. If you're a business in Northern Ireland and you did vote to remain, as the majority here did, you're now being told by the government in Westminster, because we don't have a standing one here, to go and talk to a government in what is a different country.
Yeah, no, and I can completely get that. I can see the frustration. You know, I have been talking to other business leaders of this past 24 hours, and some of them are actually saying that while they before thought that Whitehall didn't understand us, now they think that Whitehall doesn't really care. So it's not in any way, shape or form perfect. I'm more worried about what the contents of the 20 notices are. The fact that if there is no deal, we will go to WTO. Your food prices are going to be 22% dearer. The fact that there will be those little card charges that Erwin was talking about, but it's not just little charges. It's everything. When it adds up, we already have half of the discretionary income of households in Great Britain. We are the only part of the UK with a border on the Eurozone. Therefore, we are going to be affected more than any other region. That's why this sort of no-deal scenario, we have been talking about it for 2 years as far as what could happen. We were called, we were scaremongers. Now we're 7 months away and we're sitting with this, these 20 out of 80, there's more to come of these notices.
Okay.
What we need is the EU and the Westminster government to sit down and actually put the Northern Ireland consumer first, because it's us who are going to be the worst off.
Well, Erwin, as Aidan says, March is not that far away. Are you concerned about a no-deal Brexit, or are you quite confident that that simply won't happen?
Well, I would be very concerned about a no-deal Brexit. Brexit, if I thought that's what was going to happen. I just cannot bring myself to believe that the EU and the UK won't do what's best for both the EU and the UK. It beggars belief, you know, in business that you would, in the case of the UK, cut off your biggest customer, well, not almost your biggest customer, and start imposing tariffs. Whenever you are exporting, not quite, but almost double that to that you're importing, it just doesn't make sense.
It's not just what happens whenever it's day one and March time. It's not those things that occur on that day one. It's the fact that businesses and especially our industry in retail, we can't know if we are going to grow or how we are going to invest. It's the lack of certainty. Because of this brinkmanship between the EU and the Westminster government, and that's
I absolutely agree with you on that point. It is a complete shambles. But the one thing I have, regardless of whether we have a deal or a no deal, I have faith in business people within Northern Ireland finding the solutions they need to fulfil.
Thing is, Erwin, the business people in Northern Ireland, there is a huge sense of frustration because, quite simply, the Westminster government is not listening to us. The EU is not listening to us.
Well, Christopher Montgomery, you're a Conservative Party member. You know, the government is getting stick from both sides, Remain and Leave, in relation to how this is being handled.
Yes, but I mean, that's the problem with the government, which wants to deliver one version of Brexit, which isn't necessarily the vision of Brexit that everyone else inside the government wants to deliver. I'm not here to make a case for the superlative way in which the government has delivered the Brexit negotiations so far. It simply hasn't done it well. It's divided against itself, and not everyone in the government is of equally high calibre. But the thing that we should appreciate, and I mean we in Northern Ireland more than anyone else, is this is just a negotiation. This is just so much spoof. The idea that we're talking about something which is going to be fundamental to these negotiations, it's a pipe dream.
So much spoof. Do you think that will be reassuring in any way to businesses here that are concerned about this?
Businesses here are not going to be affected to any great degree, one way or another, by whatever the Brexit outcome is.
What about the potential for investment, Christopher, in Northern Ireland? Do you think would it scare anyone else off?
There's really no point me talking if I can't finish my point. Most economic activity in Northern Ireland is within Northern Ireland. The bulk of the rest of the economic activity in Northern Ireland is with mainland UK.
Well, there, Aidan, I don't know what you're worried about.
Well, I think that... I know what my members are telling me. I know.
Well, tell Christopher what they're telling you.
Well, we're worried about, in a no-deal scenario, that there be reduced availability and higher prices for a range of products, including medicines and food in particular. You've got to remember that not all the food and not all the products that are on your supermarket shelves or on your DIY shelves, not all of them come from the UK, not all of them come from the Republic of Ireland either. We are not a single entity when it comes to what comes on our shelves. So there are real concerns about the integrity of the supply chains that we have, and it's across everything from foods right through to medicines.
Well, there you go, Chris. It's not a spoof. It's real concerns from within that industry.
Let's take those real concerns. Let's take supply chains. Who is going to disrupt these supply chains? In whose interest is it to disrupt these supply chains? Unless you suggest it's going to be like the Napoleonic Wars and the EU is going to impose a trade blockade on the UK and they're not going to trade with us, they're going to trade with us after Brexit.
They are, but they're going to trade with us under different rules. So if you get the PO, you're 21% on Dutch tomatoes. That it may not mean much to you, but by the normal consumer here in Northern Ireland, you know, the average household in GB has around £202 discretionary income a week. We have 97, and every rise, should it be on insurance costs? Should it be on energy? Should it be on the food? Should it be on the clothes in their backs? It's going to be felt exponentially more here in Northern Ireland than it will be anywhere else in the UK.
Okay, let's bring in another call at this point. Michael in Newton Abbey. Michael, good morning to you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Vinny. The statement made by the UK government yesterday should send a message clearly to just the Republic of Ireland, but all the other EU member states with whom the UK currently trades. Because is the Republic of Ireland going to abide by the diktats of the European Union in the knowledge that they know that one of their biggest trading partners, the UK, it's in their interest to come to an agreement with them on trading legislation, etc.? And are they going to do what is in the best interests of the Republic of Ireland or adhere to the diktats of the European Union? And that can equally apply to other European countries. I think what the statement from the UK government yesterday should send a message clearly to all of the other 27 member states. Are we going to adhere to dictates that may be to our disadvantage based upon the situation? Or are we going to do what is in the best interest of our countries? Because if the current situation remains as it is, there is a distinct possibility of a no deal, and that solves no one's problem. And that is the reality where the European Union need to get their heads out of the sand.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much. 030 30 80 55 55. Paul Gosling, the phrase of scaremongering continues to come up throughout these negotiations. Is there any truth in that? Do you think, is this people just being concerned for the worst, which is very unlikely to happen?
Well, Liam Fox has said there's a 60% chance of no deal. So we certainly have to recognise there is a realistic possibility that we leave the EU without a deal. And actually, I agree with one of the things that Irwin is saying, which is that I think part of the purpose by the government publishing these papers is to try and get the politics to work on its side. And it's trying to say to supporters of the government, look, if you don't support us on this, then actually things will get very bad. But the politics here are very serious, because I can't see where the compromise sits, either to bring both wings of the governing Conservative Party together, or that as a solution that is currently acceptable both to the government and to the European Commission. And actually, the priority for the European Commission is not to give the UK such a good deal that encourages other countries such as Poland and Hungary and Italy that have got their own internal difficulties around
Europe. And that doesn't help anyone in the UK if that's what their main
concern
is.
So their main concern is to actually hold together the rest of the 27. And if they lose the UK, well, that's very unfortunate, but it's not as bad as losing, if you like, the whole of Eastern Europe out of the UK, out of the EU.
What do you think, Paul, that a no-deal Brexit would actually look like for the border area up in the northwest?
Very difficult, because, I mean, you have to recognise, and people in Belfast probably don't realise this, that actually part physically of the city of Derry actually spans across the border. It's not like Newry, where you've got a space between the city and the border.
Yeah, and I would assume there's
a lot
of people...
You know, the suburbs go across the border. Yeah. They're both sides of the border.
So you could very easily be working in Derry, Londonderry City, and actually be living in Donegal.
Yeah, I mean...
So what could happen there physically? You know, whether you're a business or you're an individual, you're being paid maybe in one currency, your bank's in technically a different country, it could have potentially a detrimental impact on your life, the day-to-day activities.
Absolutely. And it already has. I mean, there's many people that I know that actually work in Derry and live in Donegal because, you know, as I say, the suburbs of Derry span across the border. They're paying their mortgages in euro, and what they're doing is basically suffering a significant decline in their real income as a result. And many of those people, especially, actually, to be honest, it's quite a sensible thing to do, that many of them will be looking to places like Letterkenny to actually stop working in Derry so that actually they've got better control of their personal finances, because then their income would be in euro and their expenditure would be in euro. And sterling's weakness is certainly a big problem for employers in Derry.
Christopher, you're from that area yourself. Have you heard anything that rings true there from Paul Gosling?
I'm trying to hold back the tears about the fact that people who've chosen to have mortgage in one jurisdiction, the exchange rate changes, they have to pay a differential rate. That's their personal choice. That's nothing to do with Brexit.
You say personal choice, Christopher, but do you agree that, you know, there could be an element where it wasn't a choice? You maybe, you know, they perhaps live in one side of the border and manage to get a job on the other, vice versa, and you know they got a mortgage with a particular bank, and
it's
just
what. I'm pretty insistent it's a personal choice.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Damien in Derry. Good morning to you, Damien. Go ahead.
Yeah, that analysis from Christopher there—that just basically sums up Brexiteers.
Well, Christopher is there. He's listening.
We'll
talk to him.
We'll go ahead with it. It's the other man's problem. Brexiteers tend to be people that Brexit is not going to affect.
Oh, what rubbish. What utter rubbish.
Can you let me finish?
If you're going to
people saying a no-deal Brexit is nothing to worry about, it's absolute nonsense. If we crash out with no-deal, we also crash out of hundreds of arrangements made across the world through different organisations, trading commodities, and the regulations that govern the movement of those commodities. It will be another disaster. We'll go on to WTO rules, where the UK export industry will be devastated because their exports will be 20 to 30% more expensive for all the people buying them across the world. They'll be devastated.
Christopher?
And do you think Northern Ireland is going to survive as a backwater of low tax, low wage UK after that?
These people who come up with these fantasies that Brexit is...
They're not fantasies.
Let them respond to you, Christopher, go ahead.
You can bury your head in the sand all you want.
These people...
Okay, Damien, let them respond.
Brexit is something that's pushed forward by a secretive gang of millionaires. Brexit's not going to affect them. If you come at this from the proposition that Brexit is some evil right-wing Tory plan rather than something the British public voted for, of course you're going to come to these positions. Then let's literally talk about the Northwest. The Northwest is better off because sterling has gone down and the euro has gone up. Now, have there been 2 years of stories, Northern Ireland, BBC, business correspondents saying, oh, look at all the extra money that's come into the province. Look at all the petrol stations. Look at everything else. Look, you know, the white goods going down to the Republic. And, you know... If he's going to keep interrupting, I really...
Okay, well, just finish your point, Christopher, and we'll let him back in. We're going to have a conversation here and not a monologue.
Yeah, well, a conversation is where two people speak, not when they speak over each other. So we haven't had 2 years of saying, right, because sterling has been revalued, this is inevitably, because there's a currency zone between North and South, this has inevitably been to Northern Ireland's advantage. If you're going to keep talking about gloom, scare, fear, you're going to get a completely unbalanced picture for the actual economic position is.
20 to 30% more expensive.
That's rubbish. There's no truth in what you're saying.
That is what WTO rules.
If people come on and make...
Okay. Okay. Christopher. Okay. Damien, thank you very much. Steve, good morning to you.
Hi, Vinny. Just want to make the point about the electrical infrastructure in Northern Ireland. It's now owned by ESB in the South. How's that going to affect us after Brexit? Because you're going to have the owner of the electrical infrastructure in the Eurozone and the consumer in the non-Eurozone. Plus, you've also the issue with gas being pumped from mainland Europe into the UK. So how's that going to affect us?
Erwin Armstrong?
Well, I think...
there are some nonsense talked. We export around the world, and there is not a problem with putting goods into the Middle East, Africa, North America, all around the world. We don't need to be in the EU to export. And the second point I think I need to make, there is a, in the documents, there is actually a phrase which is wrong, where it says MHRA, which is the Medicines Health Regulatory Authority, won't be able to have notified bodies. What they're missing out is that most of the regulatory bodies in the UK actually are based around the world. So we comply with all the CE directives, we comply with everything, and we will continue to do so, as China will continue to do so, as America will continue to do so. Whether we're in or out of the EU actually won't make any difference, because it's companies, not countries, that actually that have to make their goods comply. So that's a part of the nonsense. And the second part, I think, that everybody needs to understand is we are entering the end game of the negotiations. They are not far away, although there's some talk about they may move the goalposts again and again. I believe we will get a deal. It's in the best interest of everybody to have a deal. And I believe if we don't get a deal, the business people in the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland, whether in the Northwest or in Belfast or anywhere else, always will find a solution to what they're doing.
I wish I shared your hope. I really do wish I shared
Your hope. I'll give you one example.
Very quickly, Aaron.
Yeah, very quickly. Down in the Middle East, Qatar had a blockade placed upon it by all the countries around it. And it so happens I have some relations down there. And I was talking to him and I said, well, this blockade, you import everything. And he said, well, the only impact it had on us was we didn't have any spices for a couple of weeks. He said, the business people in Qatar immediately just redirected their buying habits to other countries where there was no blockade. That's what
I hate to tell you, but we don't have the GDP of Qatar, and our consumers here will not be able to pay the extra money that it takes to get things through in other ways. I have yet to hear. I'm completely agnostic about, and our organisation has always been agnostic about whether Brexit was right or Brexit was wrong. Completely out of the ideology. What I'm worried about is we are seven months away from no deal. Can anyone explain to me how Northern Ireland consumers are going to be better off under Brexit? But can anyone explain that to me?
We're already better off because sterling has gone down in price. We are literally
We've been making hay while the sun shines, and yes, we are getting people in over the border in the border catchment areas, but we cannot build, grow and sustain an industry on currency fluctuations alone. That just doesn't work. And again, it's a lack of certainty, a lack of planning. It's a lack of certainty for us in the business. It's a lack of certainty for consumers.
Agnostic organisations like yours ought to talk about the sunshine as well as the rain. Any time that you crop up talking about Brexit, it's only gloom, 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 disaster. This is the first time I've ever heard anyone from your organisation acknowledge the revaluation of sterling has been a good thing for businesses.
Then obviously you haven't read a lot of stuff that we have.
Even the
stuff that we put out yesterday, we were saying we were delighted to see agreement on the principle of a deferred accounting system.